This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 432, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Deep dark wellness, deep dark wellness, deep dark wellness. Deep in that well is the deepest and the darkest well that I have ever found. Hear me calling you from a deep down.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 432. I am Josh Flanagan. Joining me are Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
We are iFanboy.
Welcome to iFanboy.
Every week we read a bunch of comics and one of them picked the best one they read. And we call that the pick of the week.
Who Edwin wants a polka dotted elephant?
I can do Edwin all day. Does anybody fun. Get that reference? I've been starting to make references and realize that this is a small, like I wrote the other day, like I wrote a line from that Twilight Zone episode with Bill Mumy.
Nice.
Yes, everything is good. And I just thought, I wonder if anyone will get this. It's because it kept snowing and he made it snow. Anyway.
It's better than my senior Wences jokes, but go ahead.
Yeah. It's all right. See, I got that.
All right.
We're well media versed, I guess, in useless things. The book that's the best is the pick of the week. We're going to be talking about that book, which is grim. And really grim. And then we'll talk about some other books, which by contrast just couldn't be grim. And then some other things that happen in the course of human events. That was the Declaration of Independence I just referenced, I guess. So,
wow, you need a nap.
I really do. I slept the whole night. Usually I feed the baby and then I come up to bed. I didn't do that last night. I just slept downstairs and I was like, oh, it's 6 a.m.
You didn't feed the baby at all?
No, I fed him. Okay. No, because he yells if you don't. Ah!
So which is fine. I'm hungover. You are tired. This is going to be a great show.
Connor, you know about this. For me.
I know.
Before we get to the show, a quick reminder, this is a review show. We'll be talking about what happened in the book, so that means spoilers. If you haven't read them yet, you don't know. I mean, if you've ever read Straight Bullets, you're going to know that at the end they're going to do something awful.
You're spoiling what the pick is.
I'm not, okay. Because it's coming up.
Yeah.
So there's spoilers.
Read it's also the title of the show.
Yeah. The title of the show.
Yeah. Paul, you did this.
I did do this. I had the opportunity to make Stray Bullets the pick before with the number one issue of Stray Bullets Killers. And we went with Batman that week. And Josh, you weren't here. I was talking to Connor and Allie about it. And they were mortified by this book. And that made me want to pick it even more this time around.
I got good news, Paul.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
David Laugham, Stray Bullets, Killers, number 2. This is a great little slice of life book about a girl who goes to spend a nice week with her aunt in 1986 in, where is it? It's Ocean City, Maryland. Sandcastle, Maryland, near Ocean City. November 1986. That's at the time and the place. Great black and white comic book. I think the same renaissance that Josh is enjoying with what's it called? What's your book?
Minimum wage.
Minimum Wage.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that later.
I'm experiencing that with Stray Bullets, which I had never read before. But I've read these two issues of this new series, and I have that Uber Alles edition of the first, like, 41 back from the 90s. I never took German. I'm assuming that's what Uber Alles, that would be like super everything, right? Like, Alles
is super depressing.
It's super everything. It's a big, big, big book. And yeah, so this, so anyways, this is.
This book is so sad.
This book is a bit sad. It's there's a, we've set a precedent that each issue ends with a grisly murder. Or a grisly death, at least. And last time, Tariq. And the cool thing about this, you can pick up this issue. You don't have to have picked up issue one. This will make sense for you.
Yeah, but I started digging around trying to find one, and I couldn't. And then it occurred to me, I was like, I don't think I need to have that.
No, they're one shots, aren't they?
They're one shots. And that's sort of the thing here, is that there were some great books this week, but this one, it took me to a place. It took me to that 1986 setting when I was two.
You're only nine. I mean, let's not.
But it also it's such a great self-contained story, and it just delivered an entire short story in the space of one issue, which is getting harder and harder for you know, comic writers to do.
It's a really hard skill these days because of the way modern comics are written. They're not, you know, if you look at old book comics that did tell one-shot stories, there was tons of dialogue balloons, tons of panels, and now with the decompressed style, it's really hard.
Like, you could, I mean, they say that, you know, the best adaptations to movie, it's not taking a novel and turning it into a feature film. It's take a short story, because that's what you can sort of tackle in the space of a feature film. Josh, you could make a movie out of this.
Yes.
Josh, it wasn't just Ron. It was you also who read
it. No, I read Stray Bullets for a while because Ron was effusive about it, and I went for it. But
was it one shot back then, too?
I think there were overarching.
Yeah, there's a little bit of interconnectivity,
arcs.
And there is here too.
There is,
yeah,
and there were some storylines. I think that sort of weaved in and out, but you could sort of take an issue by row. And I thought that's weird how that issue ended like such a bummer. And then the next one, I was like, that's weird how that ended like such a bummer. And then with this one, I was like halfway through, and I thought, God, maybe this will be the one where something goes right. I got, like, he fooled me, and I know the formula, but. Like, there it was, right? I was like, he could have gone one way, but he won't.
There's, unless I'm mistaken, the boy in this that young Virginia, the runaway, meets is the boy from the first issue. As he talks about losing his leg in a car accident and his dad died in that accident. Oh. So that's the catastrophe from the last few pages of The Killers number one.
I thought that boy died in the first issue.
Well, he got pretty messed up. Unless it's like it's some kind of weird parallel that it's a boy like that. But
it doesn't really. At the end of the day, it doesn't really.
But he says he doesn't remember the whole events of it. His dad died, and he lost his leg, and so you see this prosthetic leg on the front cover, and
yeah.
I think that's the way these work. I think that's how things are loosely connected to each other.
But you don't need to have gone on that journey. So for this, it's basically the story of this girl named Virginia, this teenager who has been missing, you know, for about a year or 6 months or something like that. And she goes and finds her aunt and stays with her. The aunt is also kind of troubled. Her husband has been living in the garage, basically. He has some mental health issues, and he's staying out there. And there's this boy, this teenage boy, that comes and does, you know, yard work for her and gets the groceries and everything.
But also, their kid died,
and their kid died, right?
So that sort of was the genesis of their, because they used to be a happy couple, and everything was super, and you know, Virginia loved hanging out with them and everything.
Yeah, and as dour as all this is, maybe the glimmer of hope that you saw in the middle of this issue, Josh, was that these kids. Even though the girl was reluctant, you know, because her aunt was basically setting her up with this guy and she was reluctant to go with him, they end up having this connection. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting that this episode is going to be coming out on 420 because they're basically spending their time smoking weed in an arcade on the boardwalk.
See, this is what's interesting is that, like, you, when I'm thinking about this, one thing that I thought was really, really well done is that these comics are kind of timeless. Like, they take place in a certain time, but it didn't, like, Connor was talking about how comics are made today and how, you know, they're decompressed or whatever. Like, this didn't feel old, but it feels exactly the same as they used to. Like, he tells things in a certain timeless way. The way that he makes comics doesn't really It's not hooked to a trend, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I thought really right away, immediately, like he set up the world. He set up who all of these people are very quickly and elegantly. I thought it was like instantly you kind of got a sense of who the girl was. And things changed for me when she pulled the knife for no reason.
Right.
Yeah.
The guy sleeping under the bed.
That's true.
Really,
but that's
just kind
of thing. But then I realized that she's going to turn that around and direct it outward. A guy who says one shitty thing to her and she's ready to stab him. I thought that's significant.
Yeah, it's they set up this whole world, but then also there's some things that I hopefully will see in another issue.
See, that's really what made me dislike this issue more than the first one.
Okay.
And I didn't like this one as much as the first one. Is that there was a lot of lingering threads here. See, I don't know the format of the series, if she's going to be a character we see again or find out more about, or if this is the only time we ever meet her. But there's a lot of very specific things about her that are never explained or even slightly to hint at why she's...
Well, I think it's possible that they could go back and explore it. Even if they don't, though, I like the idea that characters have lives outside of what we're seeing in this story.
Always felt. Like whenever I read issues in the past, I mean, that's exactly what it always felt like. I thought that I had missed an issue beforehand, and now I realize it's just a technique.
This is a girl who has seen some things and done some things, and we see what that's done to her, like pulling the knife and sleeping under the bed and stuff. And I think that, you know, Laugham gives us just enough information to see what kind of trauma she's been through, and we can implant some of, you know, our own experiences on that or our own ideas of, you know, what's going on in her head. But then there's enough also going on the surface in terms of meeting this guy and their interaction. And I like the idea of sort of this fleeting summer romance kind of thing, or in this case, it would be a winter romance because it's November. But you know what I mean? Like, it's two characters that have their own history, their own baggage, and they come together. And because they're of that same age, you know, age range, and they've seen some stuff, they, you know, have, you know, this chemistry.
It was good. I mean, it's really depressing, and I thought this was less of a complete piece in the first one, but it's still, he's very, very, very good at this.
Yeah, I mean, like the craft was clearly right there on the table. It was really elegant and economically done. For me, at the end of the day, I don't want to read it. I was listening to when you guys talked about it before, and I felt, you know, much the same way that Connor did. Like I went through because I've been through this already with this series, you know, and I don't know the point. It's very similar to the way I feel about Adrian Tamine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Adrian Tamine, like that, his lines are gorgeous. His character work is sparse and wonderful and it's great. But at the end, it was just like life is pointless. And I just couldn't do it for that long. I'm really surprised that you like this as much as you do, Paul, but I get it. I mean, it's very good, but it. I don't know.
I can also imagine
that
you are in a different place now, especially when you read this before, than you know, with your family reading these kind of stories now.
Yeah, I can see it being very subjective.
But even then, I mean, I felt the same way.
No,
now
you. I recall you having that struggle before. But yeah. I'm just saying, even now, it's probably even worse that you just don't want to read nihilism for nihilism's sake.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think there's a little bit more going on than the nihilism, especially in this issue where you have the characters having a connection like that in the middle. It's sort of in spite of just how cool...
I don't know that there is. I mean, remembering the old days of the old series, I don't remember there being any redeeming value in the book other than nihilism.
But believe me, I don't want to read this... Like, I don't want all of my books to be like this.
All of your Stray Bullets books will be like...
I'm fine with all of my Stray Bullets books being like this, and I love, this isn't necessarily crime fiction, but it goes into morality and relationships and the way that the things that I like about, because when I like crime fiction, I like going into the criminal mind, not necessarily like serial killers, but I'm less interested in procedure and like the detective work. I'm more interested in why do we do the things that we do, you know, why do we make those choices, and I get that out of this, so. I think people should give it a try, and I definitely want to read more of this. So, and I'm gradually working my way through that big omnibus of the older stuff, and it's kind of I found this treasure trove of stuff that I didn't know was for me, and for whatever reason, it's for me.
That's cool. Did you find that the old stuff is consistent with the newer stuff? Because it feels that way to me, but I haven't read the other stuff in such a long time.
I think it's, you know, I mean, well, you get to see sort of a different stage in his evolution as a storyteller and as an artist, but the tone is all still there.
He did some good G.I. Joe issues a few years back. Just putting that out there.
Is this the last Jason Aaron issue?
This is the last Jason Aaron issue from what he
Amazing X-Men number 6. Although it threw me off because it is called part one in the beginning. So I didn't know if this was the last arc, but it feels very much like this, a one-shot story also.
Is it part one, book one, Men and X-Men?
Men and X-Men, exactly. The end.
So the last issue, Nightcrawler came back to our earthly plane from hell and ended it brooding on the rooftops. And now this is the issue where he's actually back in the world and he's being welcomed back. There's a giant party at Harry's Hideaway, the bar up in Salem by the school. And all the X-Men are there. Even the Black Sheep Cyclops X-Men show up and make the party all tense. But they're all
there. There's a lot of awkward moments like these.
Plus, there's an awkward family reunion where Mystique shows up. I never really understood making her his mother other than the fact they're both blue, but that's the case. And I thought, you know, it was good. It was for a one-shot sort of wrap-up, assuming that's what it is. I thought it was full of great character moments. These are the kind of stuff that Jason Aaron excels at, with the everybody hanging around with a beer.
I just feel like they should make Jason Aaron like the closer. Like, if people don't know how to end their run, like, bring him in and he'll know how to wrap things up. He's so good at a coda, mm-hmm. at sort of a bittersweet ending and just tying everything up and looking at those relationships. And this is really what it's all about. I mean, there's these big, you know, cataclysmic fights and everything and big ideas. But then, you know, how do these characters interrelate? I always like that family reunion kind of dynamic where, you know, Charles Xavier is kind of the dad and he's gone at this point. And, you know, and then you have the older brothers trying to, you know, Wolverine and Cyclops, you know, scraping and clawing at each other, trying to figure out who's the new, you know, pack leader. And Nightcrawler has perspective on this because he was like, I saw what you did, Scott. I saw you do this from up on my cloud with my harp and everything. And that's kind of an interesting place to explore. It's an interesting place for a character to come back from and to have that.
Well, he also met Charles in heaven.
Right.
So he knows, he talked to him. And mm-hmm. So it's like, it was a whole thing. A lot of guilt trip in this one.
You don't get to do that with every soap opera. You know?
No.
Like it's a very unique situation and set of circumstances.
So you're not them, Charles. Sorry.
I loved Cameron Stewart's blocky, boxy, boxer-like Wolverine.
Yeah.
He looked like he'd been punched in the face a lot, which I liked.
That's what you want from a Wolverine. Absolutely.
Yeah. It was more of the classic runt Wolverine than it is the modern day Hugh Jackman style Wolverine. And I liked that, which was cool since he's such a major part of the story. But this was good. This was a really good wrap up.
Yeah. I really wish that, you know, and Aaron's going to be busy for, you know, the next few weeks and months working on Original Sin stuff. But I kind of wish, that he would be there to follow through with this Nightcrawler story.
Right.
Because, you know, that was an interesting place and he set up some, you know, interesting internal struggles. But, you know, I don't know how the next writer is going to, you know, pick up that baton and do it at, you know, satisfactory way.
Right. So speaking of satisfactory, Batman 30 was the next issue in Zero Year in which we finally get to that world that we saw the very first issue of Zero Year. The world in which the Riddler has taken over Gotham is overgrown. And it was a nice little trick that it wasn't like Riddler's been taking over for 100 years. It was that he used Poison Ivy's technologies to overgrow Gotham with foliage and things. So it was a nice little device. But we see the hellscape that Gotham has become in the wake of Riddler taking over and Batman waking up into it. And I thought this was great. I really do love that this is the only real story that we are fulfilling the promise of these younger heroes, which was what the New 52 was supposed to have done way back when it started. I like seeing this super young Bruce Wayne, Batman, trying to deal with all this stuff and trying to figure it out. I like that. It's interesting. And I like seeing him look like if you look at all the other Batman books, and especially when it first started, he's supposed to be younger. He didn't look any younger than he always did. He always just looked like the old Batman. But this one, he actually does look like a kid, which I like a lot.
And also his hair grew back, which I was happy about.
Yeah, I think that was a mistake. The hair.
That crew cut creeped me out.
But this was good. I like this a lot.
This is really good. I mean, Riddler playing dominoes with buildings. That, I mean, just big blockbustery kind of ideas while still.
You only
really
get to
smart.
Do that so many times, too. You're not really, you don't waste that one.
No.
I actually really like this. And I know that out of all of us, this was I was the guy who the story was getting a little long in the tooth for. But I got to the end of this and I was like, all right, well, that was fun. Like, that was. Like, we got somewhere, and now we're doing a thing. And, you know, I always like the opening chapters of sort of what world we're going to go into. But I'm always really impressed when people write the Riddler really well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to, you know, his whole thing. And I love it. I love it that his whole thing is somebody has to be smarter than me. I think that's really cool. I think that's, like, super egotastic. It's something that, it's even like Lex Luthor could do a thing like that, but he hasn't, you know, that's not exactly his thing. Riddler's sort of playing a game with it, but he's so confident that nobody's going to. And then, you know, like the little scene where the guy was like, I have one for you. And he solved it instantly. I was like, oh snap. You know, like it was just, I think it's fun when people write that stuff well. And it's a little easier when you know everything in the story. So you can sort of make your character seem smarter than you are, I guess. But I was impressed by it. I had fun with it, and I was like, "All right, let's move on with this story. This is kind of cool."
Yeah. So the Riddler is going to let Gotham go if someone can stump him with a riddle.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. And they try, and then they get into the Rancor pit with them. Mm-hmm. And I like ragtag Batman. I like that. You know, the Batman we see at the end of this issue is someone who's cobbled together an outfit from materials on hand, and I like that spirit of. He's not going to be defeated no matter what, but he's got to deal with what he's got around him. He doesn't have his bat cave. He doesn't have his gadgets. He's got a bunch of, he's a bunch of ropes and shit.
It's refreshing to see Gotham portrayed in a different way. Cause
is that an axe he's got attached to him? Definitely has a knife attached to
him. He's a Swiss Army Batman, basically. Yeah. He's got it.
I like that. I like grizzled, bearded Gordon who's trying to lead the resistance of the soldiers who's parachuted in. I thought this was great. Mm-hmm. I just love – and those crazy colors that are still around, the really, really sort of garish blues and oranges, but they really work for this.
Bright pinks, neon greens. I like the question mark logo with the, you know, with the eye, and you know, it's very kind of Great Gatsby. It's cool.
Yeah, very cool.
I thought it was a really good issue.
A really capable, competent Riddler. We've seen him portrayed in a number of different lights. So.
I really did like the period when he was the reformed detective guy. I actually really liked that. That was fun. But, you know.
Paul Dini, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a thing for the Riddler one way or another. So.
I didn't know they were relaunching Hulk, but they did this week. Hulk number one, Mark Wade, and with Mark Bagley this time on art.
Well, this leads to a question because I saw that and I thought, maybe this is a good chance to get rid of some books because I was reading a lot of them, a sort of uncomfortable amount, and I thought, you know, Bagley doesn't really excite me. So I didn't read it, so let me know, did I blow it or not? And I'm, again, not a big Hulk fan.
Well, it depends on how invested you were in the story that they were telling because the last issue ended on a cliffhanger of Bruce Banner getting shot in the back of the head.
I do not.
And as we know in the Marvel Universe, much like Clint Barton, you can wait on that wound for months and months.
It'll keep, all right? Don't worry about it. We'll just wrap it up.
So it depends on how invested you were. I think, you know, it's basically the same, the next issue of this story in which a specialist has been brought in to save him, a surgeon, and it turns out he's a classmate of Bruce's, so you get a lot of flashback to them in college. There's actually a lot of setup here. Since it is quote-unquote number one issue, you get sort of the recapping of the origin through the eyes of his classmate who watched it all happen through the media, knowing it was his sort of friend.
Yeah, they didn't know if it was like an animal that got irradiated and that turned into the Hulk, and then they find out, oh, it's Bruce Banner, and I know
that public
guy.
Knowledge?
I think in the Marvel Universe it is, yeah. That's why everybody's sort of freaked out when they hear his name. It was interesting, and there's a lot of shady business here. There's some like shady characters. We don't know who ordered the shooting, who pulled this trigger. It looks like a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. But the gist of it is that the Hulk wakes up in the middle of the surgery with a giant hole in the back of his head with his brain sort of hanging out and frees himself. And we find later that Coulson and Agent Hill find Bruce Banner, who is now basically functionally...
It's sort of like he had a stroke.
Really bad stroke. Yeah.
And like the last, you know, the cliffhanger is, you know, this doctor, you know, showing them to where Bruce is. And Bruce is at a blackboard and he's trying to write his alphabet. And yeah. there's like a woman next to him with flashcards, like C is for cat and stuff. And the doctor basically says, well, I don't know how smart he was before, but he's never going to be smart again. I thought the way that Bagley portrayed that was a little bit crass. It just, it seemed, you know, I don't know.
In what way?
I'm not a big fan of Bagley's art overall. Right. I thought that that moment was a little bit over exaggerated. And it's just like sort of like, you know, tongue sticking out the side of his mouth, kind of they're kind of stupid.
He doesn't have a tongue sticking out the side of his mouth.
That's the impression that it gives. It's like that's the exaggeration of the expression, I think.
And he seems to have a sort of beatific expression, which is somewhat common in this scenario.
Okay.
I just think you don't like Bagley.
I don't.
I like his Hulk in times. At times I don't. It's hit and miss. He's not the best guy for this story. But sometimes I really liked his Hulk. Other times I didn't. So it's kind of what you get. It's interesting the strategy for relaunching this with a much more mainstream artist on it. We had a lot of interesting art on it for
a while.
There's
some really interesting artists on it. I mean, they had Simonson was on there, and
that's what sort of turned me off.
Matteo Scalera.
Yeah, the shadowy guy looks like a cigarette smoking man from the X-Files, actually. But I do like the story a lot. I like Mark Waid's take on Bruce Banner a lot. It's similar inventively as a Daredevil, where he explores different things he wouldn't have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stick with this for a little while, but we'll see where it goes.
It's sort of like it's all about my faith in Wade, because I've enjoyed everything that he's been writing lately, but I can't say that this delivered in the same way that Daredevil has. And I'm trying to think, even divorced from the Bagley art, which didn't really do it for me, or didn't do it for me.
Right.
So I wanted to talk again about the Shadow Hero number 3. They're doing something interesting with this from First Second. This is from Gene Luen Yang, and Sunny Liu is the artist. You might know Gene Luen Yang from American-born Chinese, Level Up, Boxers and Saints, and he's a really great writer, writes about the immigrant experience, and this is an interesting way of looking at superheroes through the lens of the immigrant experience. I know that's so sort of tangled up in that from Superman as the Cosmic Moses story, and this is going to be a graphic novel released in July, I believe, but they're releasing chapters of it, basically issue-length chunks of it digitally. From First Second, and you can get that for like your Kindle or, you know, your iPhone or whatever. But anyways, this is the third issue, and I think what's really fun about this is that it's a guy during the Golden Age who doesn't have superpowers, and his mom really wants him to be a superhero in the way that a lot of domineering mothers want you to be like a doctor or a lawyer or something. It's like I'm really enamored of this superhero idea. And in the previous issue, she even tried to get him like to go into like radioactive waste to develop powers and stuff, because she'd overheard
it's not a good mom.
That a lot of superheroes had done that. And in this one, he gets involved with the Chinatown mob. This guy called Mock Beak, he's kind of like a Bruce Lee villain. Like he's got like claw fingers and stuff. And he's just his dad, who runs a grocery store, is in trouble with owing money to these mobster guys. And now, even though he doesn't have superpowers, and even though he's reluctant about becoming a superhero, now he has a cause. And his dad, unfortunately, gets killed because of his mob involvement. And now we're getting into the call to action phase. And it's really good. And I really like the art. I think I compared it to like the art in Chew. It's that hyper-exaggerated kind of style, and Sunny Liu's really good with action sequences, and it's fun.
I really like the first issue. I forgot to read these two.
It's okay.
I have them right here on my desktop. Yeah, I saw the script. I was like, fuck, I forgot.
Issue 2 is really fun. This is issue 3. Issue 2 is really fun because that's the one where his mom is like, well, wait, you don't have superpowers, but how can I get superpowers for you?
Right.
She's just really bent on doing that.
It's a really interesting and unusual take on the superhero experience. You don't often have the parent. Well, occasionally, sort of. I guess in the legacy characters, you'd have the parents pushing them into
Watchmen.
Yeah, Watchmen specifically, but also like Black Canary. But that's basically Watchmen. But
mm-hmm. And it's all
mostly unusual in terms.
And it's
of
all like, attached action. To yeah, it's all attached to like Chinese mythology too, because this is based on an actual Golden Age property called the Green Turtle. And that character got his powers through his shadow, which was like a Chinese spirit creature that sort of like took on his shadow. In this issue, our character Hank inherits that shadow from his father, who was originally from China, and brought that over to the West, to California. So it's great, really thoughtful book.
Where can people get these issues now until the trade comes out?
You go to First Second's website, and you'll be able to find it there. They have a directory of all the digital issues.
They come out
on Mondays. You can get it for the Kindle, for Apple devices, all that stuff.
Perfect. So if you have a Kindle and you want to check it out, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. I'm sure you can find it through there. Get it on your Kindle device. Read along with the Shadow Hero. I love the first issue, so I'm really excited to read the next two. But look forward to that. Or if you're more of a paper person, that trade will be coming out later on, and you'll be able to check that out. Gene Luen Yang does fantastic books.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, wasn't American Born Chinese one of our books of the month?
Was it?
I believe it was yours.
I think it was before that. I think it was just one of the first graphic novels that we did on the video show.
That could be it too.
I think it was like we started this spotlight stuff, and that was one of the first ones.
A lot of content over the years, but I know we definitely spotlighted it.
I love it. I think it's a wonderful book. I think I've read what's another? There was another one. I don't remember the name of it. It was about a guy who. We had like sentient boogers or something like that. Something King Geek or I don't know. It was real good.
Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Search his name. Find all of his books. They're fantastic.
You get the first issue for 99 cents.
That also helps us out by giving us a little piece of the sale. Keeps the lights on. In addition to that, go to ifanboy.com/registration. And for $3 a month or $30 a year or for any amount you want to donate, you can help us out directly. And we appreciate everyone who goes through those steps to help iFanboy keep going. And now, in American Vampire, second cycle, number two, we learn that Jason Aaron is a member of the Vampire Defense League or whatever that acronym stands for. VPNs, right?
VPN is...
That's a different thing.
That's IT.
Yeah. So in this issue, this was very David Lynchian. It's very, sort of in the...
Okay, I can see it.
In the fact that they're communicating their information via wardrobe, the color and the style and what's on the jacket, the guy, the musician's jacket playing at the Ryman, where's he playing? The Lyman Auditorium. That was very similar to the opening of Fire Walk With Me, which was, even as a kid, I thought was a very inefficient way of communicating information. But that scene haunts me still to this day. Anyway, this was great.
It really was. I actually read the, I just got caught up and I read the two issues sort of together, but I like this direction. I liked what was going on. I liked the feel. I thought, I don't know. I was all in. I read the two issues without sort of stopping. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm totally ready for more. It was a real nice return to form. Yes. I know I'm sort of speaking about some of the stuff that you already talked about,
I like the tension at the end in which the gray trader's identity is revealed through a very violent confrontation. And
yeah,
it's a scary book.
He's scary.
Yeah, it was creepy.
There are a lot of ways to do vampires. You can do sexy, shiny vampires. You can do, you know, pale, gross, you know, reminds you of death vampires, out and out, scary, gory, splasher vampires. These guys do just unsettling, creepy vampires.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things I notice is that, you know, this book has slowly gotten to the point where the humans are the antagonists a lot of the time, in this book. Like you're at this point, you are relating to the vampires who are ostracized,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. You know, I don't think it started out that way, but I realize that here's where we're at because, you know, Pearl's a nice lady, other than when she sticks her face out like that. But it was funny though, because she was like, I've got a place for you to go to live with this nest. And I just thought, what kid? The kids aren't going to want to go to that. It's called a nest.
Don't call something that, yeah.
Yeah.
If you like tongue in it, you'll like this book.
Yeah. VMS. What does VMS stand for? I forgot.
Vampire
Magistrates Society.
Don't work here anymore.
Management Society.
I get so many acronyms in my head, I can't possibly.
Anyway, yeah. Jason Aaron's a member.
He's in
the crowd scene.
Of course. He did a good in that anthology thing. He did a really good Roanoke vampire story.
This week we also learned that Thor, the God of Thunder's greatest enemy, is in fact Eternius. His the enemy face. He cannot defeat is the lawyer.
His face when he gets the
when he gets to that subpoena, his face was wonderful.
It was great.
It was. You know, this is going to sound like a complaint, I guess. But it's I thought this was very well done. I enjoyed reading it. It all tracked really well. Characterization, all that stuff. Art, wonderful. At the end of the day, I was kind of like, I don't know if I want Thor fighting a corporation. Like, it's a fine aside, I suppose. But like, it was a little, I don't know. I was like, it didn't sit right with me, I guess.
Well, I think he's done a nice, diverse range of kinds of Thor stories.
Totally. So far, I like the attempt. I like the, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think I'm going to look back at this and be like, oh, that one where he fought the Roxxon guy was great.
And listen,
I like seeing a villain he can't beat by hitting with his hammer.
That's true.
Yeah, no, that makes
and
sense.
And the frustration that he feels not being able to hit it with his hammer and just win.
And obviously, it's a hell of a metaphor, really.
So. Right. I like that he's hugely wealthy. He's like, you can have all the gold in the vaults of Asgard or Asgardia and just take it. And it's like, we can either settle it that way or with some Uru metal, meaning his hammer. Even if you don't like that, you know, that metaphor or that particular storyline, this same issue, you get Old King Thor versus Galactus or Old Galactus. Thor gets punched through the earth and into the moon.
Punched through the earth into the moon and cracks the moon. It's awesome.
That old gag.
I liked that moon.
That old gag?
I will never, ever get tired of Old King Thor. It's just something that I love. And bringing Galactus into it, and especially the way that the Ribic draws Galactus.
I don't know how Ribic didn't get an Eisner nomination, but let's...
Oh, yeah, that's kind of...
Let's not go into that. Minimum wage number 4, Josh.
Yeah, I don't really have a hell of a lot because we've talked about this a couple of times already. This is like my favorite book right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I'm getting to. I'm 4 issues into this. I had read the whole the collection of all the stories that had come before the Maximum Minimum Wage. And like, I think I get more excited for this book than I do any other book in my stack. I saw it was on a list this week and I was like, all right. Like I was super excited. And you know, it's a certain style. It's sort of like, it's like a juvenile raunchy. Sort of, and it's definitely got a stylistic thing to it that you may or may not like, but it just makes me happy every time I read it. Like I want to know what's going to happen to Rob yet. I couldn't put the other book down. I just read it nonstop, and I like this because it actually is a progression of where he left off. You don't need to have read the other stuff before, but it does help. And there's a fantastic Bill Sienkiewicz pinup in the back of this one. It's also a butt. It's a shot of a butt.
Paul. I caught up in Ms. Marvel this week.
Oh, yeah?
It's awesome.
I'm really glad. It's a really cool book.
Wow.
It's basically a teen drama.
It is.
And there's very little superhero heroics. I mean, it is her origin story. It's sort of the ultimate Spider-Man style 6-issue, you know, intro into her character. But even then, it's still basically just a teen drama. A 16-year-old Pakistani girl in Jersey City gets Terrigen Mist superpowers. And having to deal with that in her school, her hand gets really big and she has to run into the gym to hide it, ends up crushing all the lockers and things. And it's really good. Plus, it's really interesting exploration of cultural differences and that she's Pakistani and Muslim and she has to deal with the tension of that every day. This is a wonderful book.
That's great. And the Adrian Alfano art, I mean, it's
great.
In places, it looks like it's, you know, illustrations for a really colorful children's book.
Yeah, his style, I feel like I would have got, like that.
Yeah, that I would have gotten out of the library like a million times or something. This is also a cool issue because we go into a it's not referred to as a mosque. It's a Majid, or I'm unfamiliar with the term,
it's
but it's there for they go for a lecture from the sheikh who's there, and the girls are all on one side, and there's a separation in there between where all the men are, and she voices her, you know, her concern that like it would be much easier to have a conversation or to pay attention and not be on our phones, because you see some of them like fiddling with their smartphones, if we could be on the other side with the guys. And although it was interesting to like we see the conversation from the other angle, like why, you know, why don't you let your women drive or like that stuff, to actually see it from inside that community and talk about this, you know, why, you know, talking about reform and that kind of thing. It's really interesting, and it's something that we don't get to see explored from that angle a lot. And yeah, I think it's a great teen drama, and it's sort of in the way that like Stephen King's Carrie was a great story about, you know, coming of age and, you know, sexual awakening and stuff. This is a great metaphor for teenage anxieties.
And like Carrie, this would end with a little bit of blood.
Yeah, she does. Well, this is her second act of superheroics, really, where she comes in on it. And I like that it's small scale. It's not like she's not coming in on a Skrull invasion. She's walking in on, you know, a holdup at a Circle K.
Right. Convenience store robberies can often kill favorite characters. So you always have to be careful about those. Josh, I think you'd really like this book.
All right.
You don't have to, but I'm saying
trying to get rid of books here. I can't.
No, this one's special, though. This is
their books.
There's a lot of books that are great, but they're also a dime a dozen. This book is just, there's nothing really like this.
That's a very good way to put it to make me interested. That's cool.
Right. Much like Mercenary Sea is.
Are you guys still reading this?
Yes.
Of course I am, you jerk.
That's so good.
Yes.
This Mercenary Sea is a third issue from Image Comics by two people who I've never heard of, and they're doing this like...
Kel Simons and Matthew Reynolds.
Yeah, they're doing this Race Bannon story, but with World War II submarines, and there's a little Han Solo, and this is the issue where, like, it gets real, I suppose, where like, no, they're in the middle of the World War II conflict, and the Japanese are very...
Up to World War II. We're
we're in the Chinese-Japanese War, but, you know, there's...
like 39 or something like that, I think it is.
Summary, it doesn't matter. It was bad time to be in the South Pacific, and we all knew which way the wind was blowing, and this is, I don't know, this is the one where it became, like, the last couple pages, I was like, oh, this is real. They're going to make it be in this world, and they sort of grounded it. It's just like there was a submarine chase in the comic book where like they're like, shh, don't talk, because they can hear you with sonar, and super fun, you know, great. Just the look is consistent and fun. And if you listen to us talk about this before and you weren't sure about it, like go back and get them, keep going. It's wonderful.
I want everyone to read this so that we can keep reading it.
Yeah, I agree.
Looking through the periscope, and great visuals in here.
Oh, look at the cover. Like look at the one scuba diver coming straight at us in the lower right. I love that.
It's great. Yeah, this takes place in 1938, leading up to the war. I mean, all the pieces on the table for the war to break out, especially in the Pacific, but it's wonderful in that ragtag old war movie style, which there's a different member of every race or geographic area in the team. There's the Brooklyn guy, and it's great. I love it.
Well, just the first page here. South China Sea, 260 miles south of Hong Kong. Log of the Venture, en route to a coastal fishing village in the Guangdong province. It's a rendezvous with a British spy, codenamed Top Hat, trapped behind enemy lines after the Japanese took Shanghai. How can you not? I mean, that's just...
It's. I'm so glad. I thought you guys were going to be like, oh, you know, I dropped off of that. And
why would you think that? This is everything we love.
I know, but, you know, I'm so glad. That's all. Thank you.
Yeah, very Johnny Quest, very.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. All right, go to fimo.com. Tell us how much you also love The Mercenary Sea, and if you don't, then you're a jerk.
Just like Professor X.
Right. Meanwhile, let's go to an audience question.
Hey, guys, this is Matt calling from Long Island, your old pal, and I was just coming out of Winter Soldier, and I was so hooked on Cap that I was like, I can't wait to read the Brubaker run, but I feel like I need some foundation before I get to that. So what runs of Cap would you recommend that I check out before I go deep diving into the Brubaker era? So thanks so much for the show. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Oh, it's our old friend Matt.
How's your mother?
Jesus.
I hope you're doing well. He doesn't need to read anything about the Brubaker run.
No.
I don't think. Jump right in.
Yeah.
There's lots of great Cap runs, but you don't need to read any of them for the foundation.
But I think this is a good question because I feel like so much of the great Captain America stories that have come since then, it's all sort of the epicenter is that Brubaker run. I feel like, and so not being a Cap guy in particular, I don't know the answer to this question. I don't know about things before this. I know tons of things afterwards, like the Winter Soldier book that's going on right now. That's really fun, and it doesn't have Cap in it. It's got other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and it's set in like the 60s, and it's, you know, it's Remender doing, you know, James Bond awesome. Kind of story, and it's really fun. I mean, it's a Winter Soldier story, but Cap before that, I don't really know.
Well, there's a reason for that, and it was because it was terrible.
No, that's not true.
I mean, not forever.
But wasn't he a werewolf at one point?
Like, that was Werecap. That was a dark time.
That doesn't count.
But that sounds great.
That was in the 90s.
Like specifically when Brubaker came on, that was a reboot of sorts.
And a rebirth for Cap, really.
Yeah, I mean, you could start at that point. I don't mean to say that everything that came before that was crap, because it's not true, but I'm saying directly preceding that, there had been some stories. I want to say John Nehreber and John Cassaday had done a series that was really pretty, but ultimately completely unmemorable. Yeah. And they just stopped it. Like
they hadn't figured out how to do Cap in the modern world really until Brubaker. And by modern world, I mean like the 2000s. If you love Winter Soldier and you want more of that, I mean, you've got literally years and years of that Brubaker and forward Cap world to dive into. But if you really want more, and the thing is, you don't need Foundation. You just need to know who Cap is. And they tell you anyway all the information you need. But if you want stories and things, a lot of it's not collected, but there is a collection of the Mark Waid run, which was really the first modern Cap rebirth.
The Sentinel of Liberty, or was that just the run
Sentinel
on the
regular
book? Sentinel
of Liberty. Yeah. No, I think the trade's called Sentinel of Liberty. Either way, you can look for it online. Captain America by Mark Waid was the – let's figure him out again, because he had been wearing an armor suit before that. That was the attempt to make him 90s and cool, was to give him an armored suit and – Mark Waid just got rid of all that as he's wont to do, and just went back to basics and told really great Cap stories with Ron Garney on art until Heroes Reborn happened and they took the book away to give it to and then when that debacle ended, he came back for a little while. It was good, but not as great as before. So if you're looking for an old Cap run, and it was a Book of the Month choice a while back for us, Captain America by Mark Waid is a great one, but really you only need the modern Brubaker stuff if you really want to jump into those stories. And that's the one's going to feel the most like the movie anyway, because the movie is pretty much based on that first couple of trades.
Yeah, or at least the tidbits. I mean, here's the thing. I like Captain America a lot. I always have. I had gone in to try to read a bunch of different versions of it, and I kept getting burned up to the point that when the Brubaker run started, I didn't read it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want to keep trying that again. And then Connor got me the first trade or two, I think. And it was
the first
like,
two.
And I, you know, instantly I was like, this is like the best superhero story I've read in years. And it still is. It's my favorite superhero story, you know, of that, you know, sort of 10-year period. Specifically the first 25 issues. And then Bucky becomes Cap for a while. And
spoiler.
It's less interesting in that same way, but it's less good, but it's still really interesting. And I mean, the only other thing that I would suggest is that there were things here and there that were really good. One of my favorite things that came out of that was there was a little mini series called Captain America and Bucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Chris Somni drew it for a bit before they hit.
Frank Avia did too.
Yeah. Wonderful. Didn't really get talked about very much. Didn't really get noticed. Like stories about them in World War II. So that would be another one that I would say you definitely should look into. But it's really. It's specifically purpose-built to just start reading at The Winter Soldier and Red Menace. Those are the storylines.
Right. Captain America Operation Rebirth is the name of the collection from Mark Waid and Ron Garney. And it's a pretty hefty collection, 237 pages. It's totally worth it. If you're looking for more Cap stories aren't necessarily like that, the modern version, more of a superhero-y Cap, but still bring him into the modern world, I definitely recommend that. But, you know, Grunewald did great work on Cap in the 90s.
Yeah, that's why I really...
Kieran Dwyer on art was wonderful.
Ah, oh, those were
Crossbones
so good.
Crossbones and Diamondback Serpent and all Society. Those stories, Serpent Society. But you're not really going to find those collected. It's going to be hard to track those down. You don't really need to read them unless you want, you know.
There was the Captain in those. That was when Steve once again threw off the mantle and he put on the suit that became the U.S. Agent suit later. And
then U.S. Agent became Captain America and he was the Captain and he wore
When I was 11, suit. I thought that was the greatest thing. I know there was like the Black Bucky and it was like their attempts at doing racial comment. Because his name was Bucky and he was like as strong and as big as Cap. And that stuff was awesome. Or at least in my memory it was. And I'm afraid to read it.
No, I think they still are. I looked through a couple of them. But the thing is, ultimately, I would just say get the Waid run, get the Brubaker run, and you're all set. Just get the Brubaker, the first 25 issues are just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Is it 25 or 50? 25.
The first sort of omnibus, if you were to buy it, is 25.
25, right. That's a great 2-year run of Cap. That was just amazing. When that was happening, it was, if not the best book, one of the best books being published in all of comics.
Yeah, and it worked as a whole. And the other side of it is that Steve Epting and I want to say Frank Martin on colors. Does that sound right?
Sounds right.
Like, as a whole package, it was wonderful. I mean, you want to talk about being a rebirth. It wasn't really a rebirth for Brubaker, because he was sort of that was sort of the nadir of sort of the work that he was doing in superheroes. But it was a rebirth of Cap. It was a rebirth of Steve Epting, who had been a sort of average to lackluster superhero. So if you look at stuff that Steve Epting used to do.
His old Avengers work wasn't very good.
Oh, and Michael Lark. Michael Lark did all the World War II flashbacks in it. It's just a gorgeous book. It was as good as anything Marvel did in that whole decade. Did you read that stuff, Paul, when it was coming out, or?
I didn't read it when it was coming out, but I've read it since then.
And you're going to back us up here, right?
Yeah, it's good. I think we would also recommend Band of Brothers.
That's true. We would.
You're not wrong. I would recommend that just regardless. You don't really need a. It's unconditional.
Not to put you guys on the spot. Probably people are also interested in the Falcons. There's stories where Falcon is well represented.
Yeah,
Falcon's in the Brubaker run a bit.
Yeah. And I think he
was all over that Grunewald era stuff too.
Yeah, I think he's comparable to the Falcon in the movie, also in that stuff. Yeah. Great character.
Really, if you're coming out of that movie, you're jazzed about Captain America, but you weren't really a Captain America fan. You want to read more? Get those Brubaker trades or the collections or the issues or however. Those are the ones you're going to want to read.
Yeah, I'd also say if you're interested in Falcon, in addition to those comics, I would check out the Silverhawks. It's a great animated series from the 80s.
I don't know if I agree with your police work there, Lou.
Josh, just real quick, since you didn't get to do the show, you just saw the movie. What did you think of the movie?
I thought it was wonderful. I really enjoyed the heck out of that movie. I just listened to your guys' show about it, and I'm down with all of the things that you said. For me, it's a long movie, 215, something like that, and never did it feel like that for a second. It was just big and like really good character work, and it might be my favorite. You know, I was thinking about it. I haven't watched The Avengers since I saw it in the theater that one time.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Nope.
It's on Netflix streaming if you want to check it out ever.
So are lots of other things like documentaries about bands that I'm more likely to watch than that, which is just, that's me. I'm not saying it's bad. Obviously, I enjoyed it, but I haven't seen it since then. So I've watched each of them as they come out, and they're fine. You know, I think Captain America is the only one that I've watched other than the first Iron Man movie, maybe more than once. But it was, you know, it was all visualized really, really well, and it was super cool to watch him use the shield, and it did the character great. I thought it was a wonderful flick. It was super fun.
I really like the ensemble that they built up.
I thought Falcon was wonderful.
Falcon's great.
The whole time I was thinking, Falcon, you just did with Falcon what you were supposed to do with Hawkeye.
Yeah.
In a way. And they're not similar characters, but they're both Cap sidekicks to a certain extent. And I think you guys had made a point about how they managed to give all these characters personality, and the one character they didn't give any personality to was Hawkeye, who is all personality.
Hawkeye's he's not going off a tangent, but he's really the only character they've really totally kind of not done well.
No, they didn't.
It didn't help his role in Avengers is like a zombie for a really long period of time. So
yeah, but just think about it, like that would have worked better if he'd had a big bombastic personality.
Yes.
That would have been
more
entertaining to have him be, you know, mind controlled, and then what he's like after he gets out of it. I don't understand it. I don't know if they thought, oh, well, we don't want to have too much charisma on the screen.
Yeah, I actually went to
look. Supposedly, he's got a bigger role in the second Avengers movie, and maybe we'll get more. But it's really the one they've not cast well. And, yeah. Although he can be goofy. If you see him on Saturday Night Live, he can do that. But that's not the character they've created here.
I thought Jeremy Renner was the unsung hero of American Hustle. I don't feel like anybody ever mentioned him, and he was great.
Yes, he was wonderful in American Hustle.
And I haven't historically liked him very much, just because I find him so super serious. So he was always a weird choice for me for Hawkeye, because, you know,
we've talked about how great their casting is and how great their character work is, but he's probably the only character that they've really not nailed.
In that same sense, like, I thought Scarlett Johansson was really wonderful. I was, you guys kind of talked about it, but I was really glad that they didn't turn that into a romance.
Yeah.
And I thought it was much more satisfying that it didn't, and they're sort of peers.
Absolutely.
And that's cool. Yeah. And also, I had just seen Don John, I think, the night before that.
Oh, Don John is great.
I have it sitting right here.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't. I thought was interesting is that they made her completely didn't like her in that movie. And then the next day I go and I was like, I love her in this movie. Not that she was bad. Her character was, I thought.
Oh, her character's awful.
Right. I was like, that's amazing that they made her unlikable.
She's got range.
Yeah.
So thanks for the question, Mike, Matt, Mike, our old friend, Mike,
our
Matt.
Old friend,
Bill. No, man. How's your mother?
You can do like Matt did and call us at 888-FANBOY, which is 326-2697. Leave us a voicemail. Tell us where you're from, who you are. Keep it around 30 seconds. Or you can send us an email at contact@ifanboy.com and get your questions or thoughts on the show. Paul, you're doing Mad Men.
Yeah, we're doing Mad Men now. We're doing episode by episode on Mad Men on the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast. Just go to fuzzytypewriter.com. So each Monday evening, we'll talk about the episode from the night before. And I'm glad that it's only 7 episodes this time. Justified
really
at 13 episodes.
Out.
Man. But these are a lot of fun, and I'm doing those with Rebecca Shinsky from Book Rageous and Book Riot.
Oh, my God, it was so good. Sorry.
Mad Men?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
It was fun.
California.
You a lot like of people are talking about your Game of Thrones. Whatever, that's fine. But California Pete Campbell all day. I will take that. And his pants and his big smile.
His crazy hairline, yeah. It's been great.
And we mentioned before, we did a special edition podcast on Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which you can check out on our feed a couple shows back, where you can hear me and Paul and Jeff Cannata talk about the film, which we love so much, and kill time until Amazing Spider-Man in about 2 weeks.
Speaking of killing time. I liked the last one just fine. I'm not ever going to watch it.
I haven't watched it since the theater, and I'm scared to. But
you don't need to.
Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah, so you can check. We'll be back for that. Probably.
Yeah.
And until then, you can listen to the Captain America show. In the meantime, head over to ifanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about the Captain America show. You can't talk about the Mad Men show, but you can talk about all the comic shows we do.
You can talk about the Mad Men show if you want.
Sure, why not? Talk about anything you want in the comments.
Well, don't spoil anything for anybody.
Right. And that's where you can find all of our other podcasts and talk about this week's books and all that fun stuff.
And you can follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And you can follow us all individually on Twitter at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and Fuzzy Typewriter. You can guess where each of all those go. I'm J.A. Flanagan.
Yeah, I know.
It's my interesting ongoing fan fiction that I'm doing.
You made this.
Oh, man, I can't sleep.
I'm an alien. That would suck. Finally, you can write us a review in the iTunes. Has anybody looked to see how many there are? Did we?
No, I haven't.
Past 1,000?
I check daily. No,
check out really. Or you can do the thing that is probably just as effective or more so, and just let people know about it. You like something? You hear something you like? Share it with people you know, either digitally or old fashioned word of mouth. That would be fine. That would be very helpful. Or who are we on now? Your grandmother? Tell your grandma about it.
Tell your grandma. We want a grandma voicemail.
All right.
That's what
they're lovely boys. They're very nice. I don't know what they're talking about. Who is the Red Skull? We're at 947. By the way, you're out there listening. Kind of lame. We need 53 of you to step up. I don't think it's too much to ask. We've been doing this for years.
947, really?
947. Average. Here we go, by average of 5 stars. That's not an aberration. That can't be a statistical anomaly.
No.
Truth will out is all I'm saying. So, you know, you were here for it. You knew.
So 53 of you? Is that how many? 53?
53. Yep.
53 of you need to go on there. Write a quick review. It doesn't have to be an essay or a novel or a Russian novel. It just has to be
That is an absurd number.
Yeah.
There are 947 reviews.
How many does Rasmus?
Thank you. Also, it says copyright 2005, so why don't you do a little math on that one?
Jesus. All right. Till next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Hold on, I'm pulling up Around Comics, which is, by the way, this is literally beating a dead horse. I don't think they're on here anymore.
Not there anymore, yeah.
It's not up. Victory. I can't find it. We're going to look at Tom's show.
Victory.
Tom versus Comics. Victory. Let's see. Tom versus Comics, would you like to make a guess?
400.
509.
Nice.
Wow. Awesome. There's a typo here. It looks like Ron wrote it. It says, join Tom Caters. He talks about Barry Allen a lot, but a lot is one word.
Mm. He probably didn't write that then. Yeah. All right. Josh is going to take a nap. Go to bed.
Bye.
Bye.
Go to bed.
Well, I had visions. I've had dreams that could not come true. Cause I laid too close. That's when I fell down into deep dark wells. Deep dark wells. Deep
darkest world.